Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Oh, welcome in. You are listening to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I am Corey Fleck, your host for the first hour. I want to first and foremost thank everybody for tuning in this weekend and thank everybody for the emails and the comments over the week on all those daily editorials. Remember, we post stuff on an everyday basis, so visit www.kereport.com to stay up to date with what all of our commentators are saying. I'm happy to report that I am kicking off this show with Axel Merck, president of Merck Investments. And Axel, let's start off with the bond market, because the bond market has been screaming higher. We're seeing yields fall across the board in the U.S. and, quite frankly, around the world. Now we have the bond market pricing in a rate cut by the end of the year. I believe it's about an 84% chance as we are recording this that the bond market's saying we're going to get a rate cut. Last time you and I chatted, we both thought, you know what, a rate hike would not be out of the question. That has now seems to have been pushed way back. What do you think? What are some of your updated comments on what the bond market is telling us?
Exactly. So I'm always in the camp trying to figure out what could possibly be wrong here and where's the complacency. And I've been arguing that the markets are too complacent about lurking inflation. And actually, I still think the market is too complacent about it. But the market, if anything, has gotten all the more complacent about it, mostly because obviously the trade tensions have taken down growth prospects. But what hasn't really changed all that much are the wage pressures, that the labor market continues to be tight. The question is, can we pull in more people from the sidelines? Nobody's talking about that anymore. And so I had cautioned that we might be in a scenario where the economy may be slowing down and inflation is picking up. The Fed itself admits or states that recent low inflation readings are temporary. We've kind of had a perfect headwind to inflation based on how the government measures inflation, and that's going to turn into a tailwind. And so the glass is going to be quote-unquote half full with regard to inflation later this year. And obviously, if we have an overwhelming downdraft in economic activity, yep, the Fed may indeed cut rates. I am still a lone voice out there that said that may not happen. Now, talking about rate hike, that's a bit ambitious given what's priced into the market right now. But we've had a dramatic repricing in the bond market. And what's interesting is that not all the markets have participated. Usually when yields slow down in the U.S., especially further out the yield curve, that would cause the dollar to fall. That hasn't happened. It would cause gold to rise. That, I mean, it's up a tad as we speak here. But we haven't really had any breakouts on that front. And so I think part of the reason may be is because the world may be different if we get another tweet from our tweeter-in-chief. I mean, that could change everything, of course, unless we've caused so much damage, I would say, on the trade issue that that the economy is going to go down anyway. But none of this is set in stone, since I somehow cynically here say that it may well change with another tweet coming out.
Yeah, that's unfortunately what the markets are handcuffed by, is whatever is tweeted out by President Trump, especially when it involves the ongoing trade war between the U.S. and China. We will get into that in a little bit, but just another comment on the bond market. How much lower do you think or expect yields could go with the Fed more or less ignoring it because of the fact that they think inflation could be picking up and they're not too worried about some of the recent lower inflation data?
Well, as I haven't told you, but my crystal ball isn't exactly working today. We don't have a crystal ball, right? The one thing I do like to make a comment on, though, in this context is the reasons why the bond market is rallying are not related to monetary policy, right? The Fed cannot fix trade. That's a political thing, a fiscal thing. And in my opinion, not that it really matters, the Fed shouldn't try to fix trade with interest rates. I mean, the one thing that's gotten lost since the financial crisis is, what is the role of the Federal Reserve? Now, we all have our own view of whether they do too much or too little, but it is not the Fed's role to fix trade policy, right? And so their proper role, in my view, and in due respect, is that they stay on the sidelines in this. Let the big boys fight it out. Now, obviously, they have a bazooka and they can shoot across the bow, or they can do this or that, but they should not get involved in that. And so the lower yields The way you can think about the 10-year yield is what are the economic opportunities over a 10-year horizon. And in Europe, those are negative, right? They're negative yields. And in the U.S., they have come down. When the tax reform or the tax changes were under consideration, whenever the odds of passing the tax reform were higher under President Trump, and the longer-term yields were rising because the economic opportunity was increasing based on what the bond market assessed. And now with the trade tensions rising, they're coming down. Now, where it's going to head is anybody's guess, because if we go back to a 1930 scenario where you just have an escalating trade war, these things can come much, much lower. If indeed you suddenly have an agreement, well, it could rise again. And to stay on the political side here just for a tad, the way we got into this latest round was that an agreement was very near with the Chinese, and indeed President Trump was criticized of being too lenient. Well, he doesn't want to take such criticism, and the election is still about 18 months away. And so wouldn't it be great to have a quote-unquote solution going into this election? And in order to have a solution going into the election, you first have to have a crisis. And I'm being very cynical here, but I do think that may be a consideration. Now, obviously, the other part of that is, and the Chinese are increasingly thinking, maybe the U.S. doesn't just want a quote-unquote fair trade deal, but they want to contain China. If that is the case, well, then the gloves come off, and we're going to see an escalation of this, because nobody wants to be contained, even if from our perspective, we think maybe it may be appropriate.
Yeah, in the last 3 weeks, though, these trade negotiations seem to have gone in the opposite direction from getting any sort of a deal done. And it almost seems like we might see these two countries dig their heels in almost in a war of attrition to see who can manage to outlast the other. Outside of just the political sphere, do you see the U.S. being able to almost withstand this slightly better economic data than it seems like the rest of the world has been producing?
Well, we tend to forget, because there's so much emphasis on trade, that the U.S. isn't actually as trade-dependent as most other countries. We all know Germany is an exporting nation, the Swedes even more so, the Japanese are, the Chinese quite a bit as well. And the Chinese, though, could spur domestic consumption quite a bit, so they have some tools there. But in the U.S., it's a domestic consumer-oriented economy. So the folks who suffer are really the corporations with the overseas sales. Now, obviously, there's ripple effects, because if they can't do as much business overseas, they might hire fewer people domestically. But the U.S. consumer has much less leverage they used to have, is much sounder, wages are rising. And so we can have these short-term, quote-unquote, shocks when people don't invest because of uncertainty over policy. But what seems to be happening is that companies are re-engineering where they procure products from. So Mexico, for example, is a beneficiary of all this, because they believe that the new agreement with Mexico is going to come into force, and that it may be more predictable what sort of environment there's going to be with Mexico than with China. And so what the net impact is on the U.S. economy, even if it's a great one, remains to be seen. Now, all that said, if history is any guide, when China sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. I know we used to say that the other way around with the U.S., but the Chinese economy is very important to the global economy. So if the Chinese were somehow to fall off a cliff, it would have a very substantial impact on the U.S. economy as well. But at this stage, there are various headwinds out there. They are of concern, and they may well escalate. But let's not forget that there's another side of the equation, that inflation does pick up. Don't expect the Fed necessarily to come to the rescue.
Can I also get just one more comment on that U.S. dollar move? You outlined it earlier that it's kind of curious to see Treasuries getting a buy, U.S. dollar getting a buy. Seems almost like a flight to safety, as gold is just holding its own, trading in a very tight range, but these other two assets really being treated like these safe haven almost assets.
Yeah, if I just pull up as we speak, the gold is up about 0.5% year to date, the yen up 0.1%. So really nothing. And the way to think about it, if you put in context of interest rates, when rates are higher, it may be more advantageous to hold the cash. I mean, if you get real return on your cash, why hold something that pays no interest? And gold obviously doesn't pay interest. In Japan, interest rates are just about near zero. And so that's similar in that context. I'm not suggesting the yen is equivalent to gold, but that's how the market perceives it. And the yen has not been acting as a safe haven currency. And in some ways, yeah, gold has gone up on down days in the stock market, but not the way we've been used to it. Indeed, volatility in all currencies, and we monitor the currency markets very closely, has been extremely subdued. I mean, we've had news on Brexit, we have had EU elections, we've had this and that, and the markets are barely moving. And who knows what exactly the reason is. Maybe it is because the algos are trading, maybe it's something else. But this quote-unquote flight to safety, I cannot confirm that based on the different metrics that I monitor, meaning that, sure, a rally into bonds might be an indication of a flight to safety, but the rest of the picture that I look at on my wonderful screens here doesn't 100% support that.
Yeah, very interesting, Axel. I think that just goes to show kind of the barometer of what the markets are doing right now and money, that it's kind of all over the place. But again, so much dependent on the back of what's being tweeted out and any rumors that come around those trade wars. Let's also hop over to Europe and talk about the ECB. There is an ECB transition that's going to go on by the end of the year, bringing in a new leader of the European Central Bank. Do you think we're going to see any drastic change of policies here?
Well, whoever's going to succeed Draghi is not going to be Draghi. And the reason I say that is that this is a person who said he'll do whatever it takes. He is about as radical as it gets, I would think. And I don't see anybody who is kind of more dovish, more direct, so to speak, and can coerce markets with words. In some ways, he was very, very apt at doing that. And Mr. Weidmann, the head of the Bundesbank, is in play again to succeed Draghi. And I thought that he has no chance, but apparently he's making the rounds, and Germany is pushing to have him, and the odds are not that low. So if it's him, it's just not compatible with what the market is pricing in where rates are going to be. He is not a big fan of the negative rates. He's not going to be putting policy upside down immediately. But this entire experiment with negative rates hasn't exactly worked out the way it has. There are more and more voices that it's causing more harm than good. When you have negative rates, the cash that the banks are holding, they get penalized for, whereas in the U.S., they get subsidized for holding cash. We'll have to see how this plays out, but I think rates should be high in the U.S. I think rates should be high in the Eurozone. Maybe a announcement of a change in leadership, which has to happen before the end of October, is going to cause some sort of thing in the market, because I don't think the market is pricing in whoever Draghi's successor is going to be, whether it's going to be German or somebody else.
So does it just come down to then the heads of some of these large central banks just saying that the central banks are stepping away from supporting these markets and supporting the bond markets to actually get these yields higher?
Well, especially, I mean, the head of the respective central bank is obviously the most important one. And Draghi has gone into ECB meetings, including this year, where everybody came out with one view and came out with another view. Especially at the ECB, the head speaks for everybody, so he can twist words, and the other ones are kind of told not to voice their opinions. In the US, we've gotten used to every Fed president coming out and creating some noise with talking one way or another, and obviously there's free speech and all that, but the Europeans have a different attitude, saying, hey, let's have a unified voice, we agree on something, and that's usually communicated then by the chief. And so the chief has a huge influence there. And so, yes, I do think that the tone is set at the top, and it is very much worthwhile watching of who is going to succeed to Mr. Draghi. Yeah.
Now, if we get higher rates and central banks stepping away from supporting easy money policies, doesn't that mean we need a huge revaluation in equity markets?
Well, yes. First, you have to remind people they're listening to the right tape here, right? I mean, we're talking about higher rates when the market is talking about lower rates left and right. But indeed, when rates move higher, that usually means higher volatility, lower valuations, everything else being equal. And an argument could be made, hey, this market cannot afford higher rates. Now, all that said, financial conditions are extremely easy. Access to credit is abundant. Sure, there are some people that have auto loans on and so forth that with the rate hikes we've had, I'll have a little bit of challenge paying them. But unlike late last year, where some of the credit markets seized up a tad, we don't really see that at this stage. Now, could that happen if we announce if somebody like the Bundesbank president is going to take over the ECB and is going to be less supportive to periphery, sure, there could be a tantrum in the markets that could have a fallout for equities. We'll have to see. I mean, I think we all agree that we are in the late cycle stages of an economic cycle. We might disagree whether we are near recession or it's only going to happen in 2 years or so. But there is certainly uncertainty. And if people haven't taken the steps to be a tad more protected, well, at some point, it may well be too late for that, right?
Yeah. Now, let's also just talk about the metals industry or sector in general. We've kind of dabbled in it by mentioning just how really boring the gold price movement has been. However, we have seen the underlying stocks continue to drift lower. Silver continues to drift lower, and base metals, a whole other story. I think because of the trade tensions, those continue to be stuck in the mud. When it comes to precious metals, what is your outlook right now?
So I believe we've talked before on this topic, the kind of the two main buckets to look at precious metals is one is that because it doesn't have cash flow, that when volatility goes higher, there is no greater discounting of future cash flow. So that's an academic way of comparing it to risk assets or to cash. When equities exposed to volatility, they tend to plunge, whereas gold tends to shine in that context because it's relatively more stable because it doesn't have future cash flow that gets discounted. And the exception to that is when real interest rates are very high, just as it was when Paul Volcker pulled rates very high. And so it's real rates that compete with gold, and it's volatility. And when you have when you're expecting equities to go lower, well, then it may be a good diversifier, right? And historically, by the way, since the early 70s, gold has had an annualized return of over 7%. And for something that doesn't do anything, that's not so shabby. But people always wonder why they should hold it going forward, because why would you hold that relic that doesn't do anything? But sometimes not doing anything isn't bad. Now, obviously, price of gold is volatile when priced in dollars, and if people don't want to have that, cash isn't such a bad alternative either. But if people want to be more assertive on that diversification, you can use gold, or if you want to be aggressive in that, you can use gold mining, which of course has its own set of risks and opportunities.
Yes, it does. Something that I talk about on a regular basis. Axel, great having you on the show. Thanks for taking some time and sharing your thoughts on kind of a wide range of topics that are on everyone's mind, and rightfully so. They're the main drivers behind where and why money has been flowing in certain directions. Axel, thanks again for your time. Have a great weekend.
Have a good one.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.